This is Carden Stoller from the Rutgers Scarlet Knights, and you're listening to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group, featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analysts, and my old friend, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dixie, another great show this week. We will preview the biggest games as we get fired up into deep into conference season. And as you heard, we are joined by Rutgers sophomore goalkeeper, Carden Stoller, for a great interview before he and the Scarlet Knights get set to take on Michigan this Sunday. Great show ahead. So, Dixie, let's get it. Dix, what's going on, man? It's I was looking at the schedule, and I see that this is like the penultimate weekend of Big Ten regular season. Like, we're one more this week, next weekend, and then it's like conference tournaments are starting around. This season is flying by. And it made me think, like, if you look at the Big Ten standings today versus and think about what we thought of those teams, maybe like in the end of February and March, radically different. You know, you got Ohio State, who, again, a lot of people wrote off early in the season when they lost to Utah. They're 3-0 and 11-1 overall. Michigan's 2-1. They're in second place. And Rutgers is 2-1. The top of the half of that Big Ten are Ohio State, Michigan, and Rutgers. And then you got Maryland at 1-2, Penn State at 1-2, and our Johns Hopkins Blue Jays in the basement at 0-3. This is why you got to pay attention every week and throughout the season. Got to listen to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast to get ready for these games, because what you thought you might know about lacrosse, it's a constantly changing situation.
No doubt. And in addition to these conference races, Big Ten in particular, as you mentioned, you got other conferences too that are really interesting, and a lot of things are taking place. There's still a lot of lacrosse left to be played, and you know, maybe not in the volume, but in the magnitude of these games and the ripple effect that they may have. In the Big Ten, all six teams make the tournament, with the top two seeds getting a bye. They don't have to play in the quarterfinals. And you would love to be in that spot. If you can't secure a 1 or 2 seed, you want to have the 3 or the 4, just because you have a home game then and you don't have to travel. The tournament this year is in Ann Arbor. Michigan is in a good spot to make the tournament, but they've got Rutgers and they have Ohio State, who have proven to be the two best defensive teams in the Big Ten so far in 2025. So a lot of ground has been covered, and still a lot of ground to be covered, and we're here for it.
We are here for it. And again, the goal for all of these teams, the dream, is to make it to championship weekend. And we have a deal for our listeners if you want to go. We'll be back at Gillette Stadium, held jointly for the first time since 2017. That's the men's and the women's together. From May 23rd to May 26th, there's nowhere else in the lacrosse world to be than Foxborough, Massachusetts, for 8 of the best and most impactful games of the season. The action starts Friday with the women's D1 semifinals, continues on Saturday with the men's semis, and then the championship action begins on Sunday with men's D2, men's D3, and women's D1, and it all culminates on Monday with the men's D1 final. This year, Inside Lacrosse is proud to partner with the NCAA to offer you, our listeners, $5 off all single-day ticket options. Use the code ILPOD at checkout. Head to ncaa.com/laxtickets. Enter ILPOD at checkout. Purchase your tickets. Save $5. Show them that you love D-Fly and Dixie at the same time. Again, that's ncaa.com/laxtickets. Promo code ILPOD. So, Dixie, not a whole lot on the midweek slate, but there too were some notable games on Tuesday. Obviously, there's a local Baltimore rivalry. Towson and Loyola played. Very interesting game. Final double overtime. Towson beats Loyola 13-12. But the other game I know you want to talk about the Bucknell-Lemoyne game.
Yeah, that game was played in blizzard-like conditions, and we're in another cold spell here in the Mid-Atlantic region on the East Coast. It stinks. I'm preparing for the Michigan Rutgers game. I spoke with Kevin Connery earlier, and it's snowing in Ann Arbor. But I don't. I on one hand, I understand why you play those games. I guess, Bucknell traveled to Lemoyne. They're there. But for the safety of everybody involved, the players and then the officials, university administration working the games, it's just silly to play those games. The hack is one of the goalies just says, I can't see the ball. And then the officials, by rule, have to suspend the game, if not, call the game. But it's crazy playing in weather like that, conditions like that. But it is what it is. And you're right. This is the time of year where the midweek games really kind of take a back seat as teams focus on conference. We do have, Syracuse Cornell this weekend. That typically was a midweek game. And that got a lot of eyeballs and, terrific. And this year in particular, it's a marquee matchup, but I don't think anybody's going to be able to watch it this weekend. It's not on any of the, user-friendly streaming platforms. So that's a shame.
Yeah, that's a good segue into our game previews, Dix. And let's get right to them. One game you will be able to watch on CBS Sports Network is one of the greatest rivalries in the sport, Army versus Navy. Army's won the last 2 years, but Navy has won 4 of the 5 prior to that. And while this is one of those rivalries, cliched, where you throw the records out and it doesn't matter how each team's doing, that's not the case this year. We know Army. Number 5 team in the country. They're 9-1 overall. They're 4-1 in the Patriot League. But Navy, we haven't talked about them in a while, but they're right behind Army in the Patriot League standings. They're 7-4 overall, 3-2 in the Patriot League. Again, you can see this on CBS Sports Network, and it will start at 12:30 on Saturday afternoon.
Big game. And when you look at the Patriot League standings, Army is in second place with a 4-1 conference mark. They're in second behind Boston University. BU beat Army. So by virtue of that head-to-head win, Boston has the number one spot right now. Navy sitting at 3-2. Whoever wins the Patriot League regular season, they get to host the tournament, the semifinals and the final. Quarterfinals are played at campus sites. 6 out of the 9 teams make the Patriot League tournament, with seeds 1 and 2 getting a bye. So Army wants to keep on that trajectory. This was being set up, and maybe we'll see it, maybe we won't. I don't know. Will Colletti and Zach Hayashi, two of the best faceoff men in the Patriot League, they've both been dinged up. They both missed time. We'll see if they return for this game. A player to keep your eye on for Navy is AJ Marsh, long stick defender. He can play close. He can play long stick middie. Will he be matched up on Eicher for Army? Will he be matched up on Evan Plunkett for the Black Knights? He never leaves the field for Navy. He never leaves the field. So this will be an intense battle. The Star Game is always terrific get together of these two service academies, and this weekend will be no different.
Yeah, no doubt. It should be a great game. And again, these teams are probably closer matched than people might realize. I got a question for you. What value can someone place on the hosting of your conference tournament? I mean, how many do you think that's worth a certain number of goals? Again, it doesn't always work out, but it's a huge advantage, right?
I think so. Maybe a goal and a half advantage. You get to sleep in your own bed. You're in familiar surroundings.
Use your own locker room. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I think, I mean,
More fans.
obviously you got to get between the lines and play the games. But I think any coach will tell you hosting a conference tournament at your venue on your campus is preferable to having to travel.
Yeah, no doubt. And I wonder, in a situation like the Patriot League, where it's determined by the number one seed, like you might know that after the last regular season game of the year, or you might know it a couple of weeks in advance, versus in a league where, like the Big Ten, where it's like a predetermined site and someone knows they're hosting it, you make your travel arrangements before the season starts that you're going to go. I think there's even more of an advantage in a situation where it goes to the top seed, and then it's sort of you might have to make those decisions even later. I think that it can even be a bigger advantage. So both these teams will be gunning for to win this game and take an advantage in their, in the conference tournament seeding race.
I think Patriot League is even more interesting when you consider there's nine teams. And I'll go back to last season, 2024. Loyola going into the regular season finale against Army. If they had beaten Army, they would have been the number one seed in the Patriot League tournament. They lose, I think it was a one or two goal game to the Black Knights, and they got the six. That's how tightly contested this league is.
Yeah. Big game, 12:30 Saturday afternoon in Annapolis. Another big game. This one's in the Big Ten, 1 o'clock. Catch it on Big Ten Plus. Number 19, Johns Hopkins, hanging on to a top 20 spot. By the way, the Big Ten, all six teams in the top 20 this week. Blue Jays are 6-5, 0-3 in the Big Ten, as I mentioned, kind of in the basement of the Big Ten. They'll take on number 8, Penn State at Panzer Field. Penn State 7-3, 1-2 in the Big Ten. This game's at 1 o'clock, and really, the Jays need this. What else can you say?
Not much else needs to be said. There's a real prospect that Hopkins could go over in the Big Ten in 2025. Penn State played a brilliant fourth quarter against Michigan this past weekend in Ann Arbor to win that game. Matt Traynor stepped up big. Jack Frassion stepped up big. And they used their backup faceoff man, Reed Gills, to win a lot of possessions in the fourth quarter. So Penn State got the win they needed. Hopkins, on the other hand, loses at home to Ohio State, the hottest team in the country. Even homecoming couldn't get it done, for Hopkins. So this is a team that offensively they're lacking punch. What's going on in the goal? Owen Gelinas was pulled for Jack Webb, who starts between the pipes this weekend at Panzer for the Blue Jays. I mean, Hopkins is in a tough spot, man. They're in a really, really tough spot. They need some mojo. They need some energy. They've lost three in a row. We'll see. Does Russell Melendez play? He's missed the last couple of games. Huge game for the Blue Jays. Huge game for Penn State.
Yeah.
Because again, right now these guys sit at 5-6, and you really don't want to be in that spot to have to travel for that quarterfinal matchup in the Big Ten tournament.
Yeah, Hopkins has controlled this series historically. The Blue Jays won last year. They won four of the last five. However, this one is in at Penn State, and the Nittany Lions have been very good in University Park. They've won the four of the last five meetings that were in State College. A lot of motivation for both teams to win this, and you can find this game at 1 o'clock. A top 10 matchup in the Big Ten in Columbus, Ohio, when the number two ranked Ohio State Buckeyes, again, as we mentioned, sitting at 11-1, 3-0 in the Big Ten, will take on number six Maryland, 8-2 overall, 1-2 in the Big Ten. Catch it at 2 o'clock on Big Ten Network.
Joe Beninati and Don Zimmerman will have the call, as I will be in Baltimore celebrating my son Matt and the other Loyola Greyhound seniors. Huge game. And think about it. If Maryland wasn't upset by Rutgers this past weekend, this could be a 2-3 matchup. But it hasn't lost any luster when you consider how well Ohio State's been playing. For my money, the best defense in the country. Top, when you talk about their rope unit, when you talk about the close defense and the goalie, Maryland's not far behind when you consider, I think their rope unit, their shorties and their poles might be a little bit better than Ohio State. Give Ohio State the nod, I think, with the combination of close D and goalie. So this has all the makings of a low scoring game where every possession will matter. And let's not forget Columbus, Ohio, Ohio State Lacrosse Stadium. This is the scene of Glovegate 2 years ago. So no love lost between these two programs, no love lost between these rosters, and we'll see how this one plays out. Maryland, Who would have thought that they could be looking at 1-3 on the year and could slip, to that 5-6 scenario, if Penn State should win this weekend and Maryland falters. So kind of unfamiliar territory for the Terps, but you better believe they're circling the wagons in College Park to get this done out in Columbus.
For sure. Maryland has, as you can imagine, has dominated the series. They've in the 17 matchups, they've won 14 out of them. And the Terps have won six in a row and eight of the last nine. But this is an opportunity for Ohio State, and it should be a great one. 2 o'clock on Big Ten Network.
Expect a big crowd as well. The Ohio State faithful. That's one of the been one of the coolest things to see in the evolution of the Big Ten Men's Lacrosse Conference. When you talk about Michigan and Ohio State, they have the lacrosse only facilities. So schools made the investment, but the fans support them. The youth lacrosse communities in Michigan as well as Ohio come out to support. It's really neat to see. So it's but both venues have turned into great environments.
Big ACC game down in the Triangle area when number 7 North Carolina will travel over to Duke to take on the 12th ranked Blue Devils, 4 o'clock on the ACC network. Fans may remember last year when a depleted UNC shocked then number 2 ranked Duke 15-12. 2025 Tar Heels aren't going to sneak up on anybody. This should be an incredible rivalry game.
Anish Shroff, Jules Hennenberg will have the call on ACC Network. Gigantic game when you consider no AQ for the ACC and Carolina, a dominant win a week ago over Virginia. They did what they needed to do against the Cavaliers. Notre Dame knocked off Duke a couple weeks ago, and then Duke, though, out of conference, got a big win over BU last weekend to right the ship and give them a little bit of momentum heading into this one. Should be a great game. You're looking for storylines. Kevin Unterstein, now the defensive coordinator in Durham, was a longtime assistant to Joe Bresci in North Carolina. You referenced the victory last year by Carolina, kind of being a harbinger of things to come for Duke in the NCAA tournament. Duffy, Petromala, they're the two for Carolina, but they're getting great scoring support from the midfield. And Duke is a team that, everybody continues to have a lot of question marks for the Blue Devils. They can answer a lot of them this weekend with a W over the Tar Heels. So this will be a battle at Koskinen Stadium this coming Saturday.
And that takes us to the biggest game of the weekend, Dix, when number 4 Syracuse and number 1 Cornell will step out of their conferences. Syracuse is 9-2, Cornell's 9-1. This game will be played. The two teams from Central New York are heading to Long Island to meet in a colorful top 5 battle at 4 p.m. at Mitchell Field in Uniondale, New York. And the contest will be broadcast on the Corrigan Sports Network, which I believe is a streaming platform that you can get at our friends at Corrigan, CSC.com, CSCLAX.com. How do I get to the Corrigan Sports Network?
I don't know. Follow their social media, go on their
Yeah,
website, I
go on
guess.
there, go. Yeah.
Paywall.
But find this game. It should be a really good one. These teams, last year, the last two games have gone to overtime. Last year, Cornell won 18-17 in double overtime. The last meeting before that was in 2022. It was 16-15 in single overtime. We can only hope for another game as good as that.
This game will be vicious. Last year's game was very physical. You had the ejection of an assistant coach from Syracuse.
That's right.
It
I
had a little bit
remember.
of everything. I mean, it had a little bit of everything. And now you take this upstate battle, if you will, to Long Island. I think the crowd will be juiced. It'll be a hopping environment. I'm looking forward to, I think Billy Dwan takes CJ Kirst. Two of the best are going to battle. Face-offs are going to be key. I think Syracuse has a leg up in that department. This is going to be high scoring. If I was a if I was looking to wager in this game, which I'm not, go for the over. And I just think it's going to be a high octane game between two teams. And dare we say, this could be a preview of Memorial Day weekend. And you think about the rich history between these two schools in the postseason. Now, in particular, the national championship that Syracuse won coming from behind against Cornell back in the day. That this is going to be a great game.
Yeah, for sure. As I mentioned, Cornell's won the last two of these in the series, and four of the last five, and the Orange will be looking to change the direction of the series on Saturday at 4 p.m. All right, Dix, there's one big game on Sunday. It's in the Big Ten. You'll be calling this game. It's number 14, Michigan, at number 18, Rutgers. It's at noon on the Big Ten Network. Before we get to talk about the game, let's bring in our guest this week, sophomore goalkeeper Carden Stoller. Please welcome into the show Rutgers star sophomore goalkeeper and the 2024 Big Ten Rookie of the Year, Carden Stoller. Carden, thanks for joining us on the D Fly and Dixie podcast.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Carden, great to talk with you in the midst of the Big Ten gauntlet that Rutgers is going through, along with the other five teams in the Big Ten Men's Lacrosse Conference. Before we get to lacrosse, I know I've mentioned this on some of the games that I've covered for you. I know some folks who attended a camp, Camp Tuckahoe, and I mentioned it when we were talking about your game against Michigan this Sunday when we were promoting it on our game last week. And I got some DMs and some hits on Instagram saying I used to be a counselor. And it turns out my co-host for this podcast, Dan Flynn, used to be a camp counselor at Tuckahoe. What makes this place so special?
This place is great. Obviously, up in Maine, sports camp for 7 weeks. You get a whole bunch of guys from all over the country that come together and just are able to hang out, and you're able to make such great relationships with these guys. So I was fortunate to go up there for 8 years, be a counselor for 1 year after that. And the relationships that I've made with counselors, with campers, has something that has stuck with me forever. Wherever you go, you're always bumping into people, even like here, that have relations to the Camp Taco, and it's great. It was a very special part of my life, and I hope to definitely get up there over this summer and the summers going forward for a few weeks.
When you go up as an alum, what do you do?
Yeah, so I'll run some little lacrosse clinics. The kids love it up there. They're all in. They all know what's going on down here and all over the country when it comes to college lacrosse. So those kids are so involved. I'm in touch with the owner, Jeff Konigsberg, every now and then. He's always like, "You gotta get up here. The kids love you." So it's always cool to hear that. And anytime I hear that, I definitely try to go anywhere where that is and get a chance to kind of just give back and, enjoy what I once was, being that kid looking up to guys that were my age that always came back. It's cool. It's really special.
So I got to jump in here. I spent the summer after I graduated from college as a counselor in Naples, Maine, at Camp Tuckahoe. Crazy Legs Conti, one of our Hopkins friends, his grandfather helped start the camp, and he recruited me to come up there with a bunch of other guys from Hopkins, some basketball guys. I was the baseball counselor, and we had a great time. I was very happy to leave, though. It was not exactly a place where I just graduated from college. In terms of social life, but I had a wonderful experience. I still think about it all the time, and this is such a crazy coincidence. Are you a member of the Dippies Club?
I was for a few years in my younger days. That was always cool, waking up, running down, getting in the lake, I guess dipping, skinny dipping, hence the name. I think now they've changed it to where you have to be dressed just with how things are going. So, but it's cool little thing, cool little tradition that they do up there.
Yeah, that's amazing. All right, back to the regular scheduled program here.
I can't believe I'm just picturing Dan Flynn as, oh no, actually I'm picturing Crazy Legs as Bill Murray in the movie Meatballs,
Was very much that way.
running the
He went
camp.
there. He went there his whole life. He has been a
Wow.
counselor forever. And Crazy Legs Conti is our friend, but he's a professional eater.
I
He's
gotcha.
a professional eater. You see him on, Coney Island hot dog eating contests and other places, among other interesting things that he does. He is the real life version of Cosmo Kramer in New York City. Anyway, back to lacrosse talk.
Beautiful, beautiful. So right off the bat, you prepped at Boys Latin in Baltimore, and you end up at Rutgers, and right on the cusp or right on the border of the big city, New Jersey. Not a natural, seemingly transition for an MIA player then to go to Rutgers. What led you up to the Banks, and how's your experience been as an MIA graduate in the up the Turnpike?
Yeah, it's unique. There's definitely not a lot of guys that go up there. I think the last one was Remy Reynolds from Gilman for a few years. And I think growing up and when I got to high school, I realized I wanted to play Big Ten lacrosse, play at the highest level. And I reached out to a bunch of different coaches all over the country, all schools, and Rutgers was able to give me a chance. I wasn't, I guess, going in my junior year, not crazy recruited, wasn't on any lists or anything. And I knew when I got that response back from them, pretty early after I sent them an email, I'm like, this is the place I want to be. And then after going up there for a couple of visits, talking to the coaches, I'm like, this is a no-brainer. This place is sweet. Just built a sweet facility that I'm in right now for academics, where our locker room is. It's so cool with, and then playing in the stadium, SHI, it's great. And I think just kind of where I'm at now, it comes a lot from playing at Boys Latin in the MIAA, where we have great coaches, great teammates, and every game is it's the highest level of high school lacrosse. And I think that helped me so much in my transition from high school to college, where I was just able to feel free and, just move freely through it. And I think, obviously that first week and college is always going to be tough, but right after that, I just felt a part of it. Felt like I can fit in with anybody, play with anyone. I credit that to Boys Latin, Coach Farrell, and all those guys down there.
Let me ask you another question about this journey to Rutgers. You were the freshman of the year in the Big Ten last year. You redshirted your freshman year. So you make this transition from BL, where you won the championship, you're all MIA, you're ranked in the top 50 of IL, and you go to Rutgers and you redshirt. Not the usual path for the guy who's the rookie of the year the next in their real freshman season. What did you get from that year off, that practice, that experience, and how's that helped you with your confidence and your game as you make a difference now in the Big Ten as a star?
Yeah, definitely. I think I credit my success now to that year. We brought in Kyle Mullen, Harvard grad, who chose to take his fifth year here, and you could tell. I mean, that guy, he was in his fifth year of college experience, played every year when he was at Harvard, and he was such a great role model for me. And he was someone that I could always go to and talk to on certain things. And being able to watch him play and how he carried himself was something that I took and brought into my freshman sophomore, my first year playing last year. And I kind of look, there's times where I kind of just look back and I look at an old film from my freshman year. I'm like, yeah, I don't know if there was if I was going to be able to do what I was able to do last year and right now this year, that true freshman year. So I'm pretty grateful that the coaches, they were, we had that conversation early on in the season. They're like, I think we want to redshirt you. I'm like, and in the back of your mind, you're always like, man, I went from playing very starting 3 years in high school and now I got to sit out a year. But that's the reality of it. I've always known that it's wherever you go, you're not just going to be able to play right away. You got to earn it. And, it was what it was, right? And looking back, I'm beyond happy with that choice to be able to, maintain the 4 years of eligibility and learn from guys that have experience. It's the greatest thing ever. So, sticking with that, and I think just with that year, it was a blessing. It was cool. And I'm beyond grateful for it.
Cardin, one of the places you go in the off season to train is Goalie Smith, run by Mike and Andrew Gavazdin, and that enterprise has really taken off and become the breeding ground and the training ground for goaltenders like yourself. How would you best describe Goalie Smith and how it's helped your game?
Yeah, one of the great things about living in Baltimore and being from there is just that lacrosse hotbed. And you get these things like Goalie Smith, where you have two brothers that have made the first and one of the best goalie specific trainings, and they're able to get goalies from all over the country. And with that, they're able to get some of the best shooters in the countries that live in, well, country that live in the Baltimore area. So obviously, your sons, Matt and Owen, they're always there. And then they got guys from all over the place, Philly guys coming to shoot, DC guys, wherever, all over Maryland. And then you kind of just get to that idea of competing with goalies like you that are playing at, a high level, even in high school. It's cool. It's a cool environment that you wouldn't really think of when you think of, you're playing college lacrosse, you have all these different teams, different guys. You wouldn't think they'd be friendly off the field, right? So it's cool to have that buy-in. You know, the goalies, everyone's always like, yeah, you know that guy. I'm like, yeah, I know from Goalie Smith or whatever. The goalie group, it's just a tight-knit position that everyone kind of knows everybody, and it's because of these Goalie Smith sessions. So the reps that you're able to get from top shooters and be able to get pushed by top goalies, it's a great experience. And obviously I'm only living 20 minutes from where they do those sessions. It's a great resource, and it's something that I take advantage of in the off season whenever chance I get.
When you look at the Rutgers season thus far, I mean, you guys were doing okay, right? You were playing okay lacrosse, but you come off of a loss to UMass, and then knowing Coach Breck, your second season begins with conference play, and you really surprised a lot of people by knocking off Hopkins 11-8. Then you go to Columbus and face probably the hottest team in the country in Ohio State, and give them all they can handle, and then you beat Maryland for the first time ever as a member of the Big Ten Men's Lacrosse Conference and the first time since 1980. How would you characterize the Big Ten season so far for Rutgers?
Like you said, we kind of started off with a little rocky start, had that loss to Stony Brook, a few other losses in there, great teams, and then that UMass loss. So we knew that if we wanted to have some more time together, we had to turn it up. And I think, and it's not ne necessarily a we change anything in practice. Like, we know what we have to do, we know what we're capable of. And when Big Ten play came around, I don't know. I just everything just started kind of just clicking at the right time. And I think that's kind of been the theme for us, is that, at this time of the year, and you look at our record, it's no secret that, we have a few bad losses that, we gotta click at the right time. And Hopkins, that game, everything just was going great. We're flying all over the field. Offense was clicking, defense was clicking, and we got a great win out of it. And then go up to Ohio State, number, I guess, three in the country at the time. I mean, a two goal loss, 13-11, right? And right, we just know that we're there. We were able to, even from a loss, I think we were able to carry that momentum into Maryland. And like you said, it's cool to, I guess, be the first team since 1980 in 45 years, and give Maryland their first Big Ten loss against us. So it's cool to be a part of that. I know that's something that's gonna stick around here forever, but that's in the past now. Now we got to keep looking forward, look towards Michigan, and then after that, Penn State. So right now we're focused on Michigan. That's in the past, and we're just gonna keep approaching each week the same way.
In the win against Maryland, you ice the game with a full field goal against the 10-man Ryan. So this is a two-part question. One, when's the last time you scored a goal in a game? And second, what did you see on that play? What gave you the confidence to take the shot? All that stuff.
Yeah, definitely. So the last time I scored was only a couple weeks ago against St. Joe's. They were a 10-man team.
I'm sorry, I didn't know that. I'm sorry, I didn't know that.
They were a 10-man team. They were doing it after every ride against our clear. But before that, never. Never in high school. We rode coast to coast in a couple of men's league games over the summer, but that doesn't really count. But yeah, before that St. Joe's game, never. And that second part of the question, we came out of a timeout. We were clearing the ball, and we knew they were going to be in a 10-man. We were able to see it from the jump, and we threw two overpasses. And then after that, there's usually short time. I think there's only 5, 6 seconds left. And I think that right when that second overpass went over to our defenseman, I'm like, if I get this, I'm going to pull it. You can see it on the film. I catch it. I don't even look at anyone else. I'm like, I'm gonna pull it. And yeah, I think there's some skill. There's probably more luck that goes into that. Just the spin and all that. I'm like, I'm gonna pull it. Pulled it, and it went in. So it's weird. It's a weird feeling. It's not something I'm used to. Where some of these guys, they're scoring, 2, 3 goals a game. They're used to scoring. They know how to handle scoring. Yeah. So when that ball went in, I just kind of lost my mind and just like, wow, this is crazy. Like, you don't wake up thinking you're gonna have a score a goal in a Big Ten game, especially against Maryland. So just all that together was wild. That's something I'll never forget. Because it's really cool. Just everything kind of just lined up perfectly for that to happen.
A lot of times when you think about Rutgers, you think about offense. Jules Henenberg, Adam Charlambidis, Shane Knobloch, Ross Scott. Don't get me wrong, you guys have had some terrific defenders through the years, but really when you look at Rutgers, it's offense and the NASCAR tempo and that kind of thing. What makes the defense the difference this year for Rutgers?
Yeah, I think we have great leadership. We brought in Princeton transfer D-Mitty Joe Youngerkiss, who voted the captain before the year started. And so from him down to our defensemen that are all seniors, with Ben McKelvey, Ben Stefanos, and Tommy Mendyke, who's another captain, right? These are all guys that are old. They know that this is their last year, and they want to leave it all out there, and it shows on game day. And the work that those guys have put in over the last few years and this season, it's all coming together for them, and I'm so hyped for them. And they're playing great, and they're making my job a lot easier. So just the accumulation of those guys, just having that experience, and just knowing that this is probably it for them after this year. No matter where we go, how much time we have left, like, this is it. And I think those guys are playing with that in the back of their mind, and it's fun to watch. And those guys are all tight. We're all tight as a defense off the field. We're all good friends. So I think just we all just trust one another, and we're able to do that because of our relationship, and it just shows on the field.
And I'd be remiss not to mention Scott Beda, a Rutgers all-time great, who is the offensive coordinator for Michigan. So you're going to be matched up against his guys and his game plan on the other side of the field offensively. What do folks need to know about Rutgers?
Yeah, I mean, as an offense and as a team, right? I think we kind of just have that gritty personality, just kind of how we approach things. You look offensively, we're very young. If I go through it, all the guys, it's all freshmen, sophomores, so it's really cool, not for this year, but just for the future as well. And then you kind of go to the middle of the field with Matthew Pilato, and that he's a Union transfer, D3 Fogo of the Year, first team All-American, right? With him, we're able to play make and take it, right? We can get a goal, and we can know that we get a win back with Pilato, and push it down the field and get another goal. So you tie all that together, and when everything just clicks and goes the way that we expect it to, and that it tends to usually go, we're a good team. I think we're a pretty darn good team when everything's clicking and everything's going our way. And which even when things don't go our way, we still know that, we're capable. We're capable of doing anything. And right from defense to Fogos, D-middies, offense, goalie, it's we're all when it's all together, it's great, and it's fun to watch.
Martin, Dixie mentioned on Sunday you'll take on the Michigan Wolverines at noon on the Big Ten Network. What does Rutgers need to do to get a win on Sunday?
Yeah, like I said earlier, nothing changes, right? We're gonna stick to our plan. We're gonna stick to our process, and we're gonna approach practice the same week as if it was a Tuesday game against whoever, or if it's a Big Ten game against Michigan, top team of the country. Right, our process, we like I said, we trust it, and we're not, we don't obviously we have our game plans, but we're not gonna change anything based off our approach based off the opponent, right? We know it's a big time game, but it's a big time team, but we're also a big time team, so. Like I said, we're just going to approach it the same way, and not let who we're playing affect us mentally or anything like that.
All right, ready for some quick hitting questions, some fun ones.
Let's do it.
All right. What's your all-time favorite sports team?
Baltimore Ravens.
Are your families in town for a game? What's the best food on the banks of the Raritan?
Oof, that's a good one. I think there's a little spot in New Brunswick called Fat Cactus Taco Place. Good time in there.
All right. Who's your favorite Rutgers team to go watch play?
Favorite Rutgers team to go watch play. I want to say football, but they're not as good. I went to a wrestling match in the winter. That was pretty. It was pretty electric. It was against Penn State, who I think was like one in the country at the time. And that they play in the rack where the basketball team plays. That environment was sweet.
All right, you got to swim across either the Baltimore Inner Harbor or the Raritan River. Which one are you picking?
I'm probably gonna have to go with the Raritan, the Inner Harbor. If I go in there, I don't know if I'm gonna come back out the same way I went in. A lot of nasty things in there. I'm gonna try my best to stay out of there.
I don't
All right.
know anything about the Raritan River, but I would say that all day long. And then I
Yeah.
still can't believe that they said the harbor was safe to swim in like last
No
year. I mean,
way.
you got to be out of
No
your
way.
mind.
All
There's
right.
no way.
All right. You're from Owings Mills, Maryland, which is right outside of Baltimore for you people who are geographically challenged. But you spent 8 summers in Maine.
Yeah.
Lobster or crab?
Oh, that's a good one. I gotta go crab. Stay true to the Maryland roots. But if I'm in Maine, lobster for sure. But crab over lobster, I think in general.
What is the best Rutgers lacrosse tradition?
Best Rutgers lacrosse tradition. I think after big time wins, we'll sing our fight song on the field with the whole team. It's pretty cool.
Who's the best chef on the Rutgers team?
Ooh, best chef. Man, I'm gonna go with one of my housemates, Dylan Groff. He cooks basic, like it's the basic cook, but he adds a lot more things to it that make you just cooking eggs. It's not gonna be just eggs. There's gonna be a lot more around it that make those eggs great. So I'll go I'll go my roommate Dylan Groff.
Nice. Does he have a specialty, like one particular go-to? Or is it
Not
just
really. He
okay?
he's just set to a few things, but he does it to the best of his ability, and it looks pretty good.
All right, when Rutgers goes on the road, what's your favorite restaurant to eat a team meal in?
Yeah, I'm gonna be a little biased here when we go down to either Loyola, Maryland, or Hopkins. We'll eat at Sammy's in Hunt Valley. That's always, even when I'm home for break, we'll still always go there with my family. So gotta go there.
All right. If we walk into the Scarlet Knight lacrosse locker room, who's running the aux and what are we probably going to hear before practice?
Guys mostly on the aux is Colin Zeller, and he's pretty old school. He's either playing Beatles or Bob Dylan. It's pretty old school, and it's kind of nice to not always have the rap layer, blasting or anything like that. So he likes to change it up a little bit. Sometimes he'll get a little more funky, but for the most part, he's a big Beatles guy.
He's a freshman.
He's a sophomore, but
Okay. Ah,
freshman
young, a
guy. Yeah.
youngin' with who's controlling the music and playing classic rock. I love it. I
I
got
know
that's my
it's
guy.
great.
All right, last question. I've asked a bunch recently on the podcast. We've had a guy from Tower Hall. We've had a guy from Loyola. We had a guy from Mount Vernon Prep, and now we have a Boise Latin guy. If we are forming a four-person Mount Rushmore of Boise Latin lacrosse, who is on that?
Oof, that's a good one. Are we talking about like their career at Boise Latin or just in total after high school and
I'm
college?
going to let you decide that. It could
All right,
be a coach, could be some. I made a list of some guys. I went just for research. I went on to the Boise Latin Hall of Fame website and saw some names I'm really familiar with. But they're all old guys, all old guys. And
Okay.
I'm curious who you put on there and who
All
Dixie
right.
says too.
Let's see. I think it's I want to say Pat Spencer. I know his time at Boise Latin was nowhere near what it was at Loyola, but if we're combining it all together, I think yeah, go Pat Spencer. I think Matt Brandau is one. There's a lot. I guess you put Wisnowskis up there. And then I mean I gotta go a little gotta keep it close to Myers. I'm putting Don Petromal up there. No doubt.
Yeah, that's a good list. That is a really good list of modern day stars. Dixie, you got any thoughts on this?
Yeah, so back during my time, you got to look at a guy like Glenn Smith. John Glatzel was a little bit after my time, but he was, and his brother Tom actually had a good career in college as well. Ryan Mollett was a good defenseman. I know I'm missing guys.
I started my
That.
list with Bob Shriver.
Oh, yeah,
Well,
of
of
course.
course.
Yeah, for
Yeah, you
sure.
got to put him on there. And then the Websters all went to BL. The
John Webster, good call. Yeah,
Federicos.
he almost single-handedly beat us in '88 for that
But
championship.
Mickey and all those guys, well, Dick Webster and all the old timers, the Federicos and the Ciccaronis all went to.
Guy
And
Matrasini
Guy
was another.
Matrasini. Yeah. So some people who have really contributed to the game of lacrosse, BL's famous for that. But your list is really good, Carden. And
Yeah,
I
it's tough to do
appreciate
four.
you pulling that
Yeah, I gotcha.
off the top of your head. I really love it. Hey, Carden, thank you so much for joining us on the D Fly and Dixie podcast. And best of luck to you and the Scarlet Knights throughout the rest of the season.
Great. Thank you guys for having me. Really appreciate it.
Welcome back to the D Fly and Dixie podcast presented by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. I can't believe he went to the same summer camp that I worked at
Yeah,
many,
and
many moons ago.
my boss at Big Ten Network as well is an alum. You went full fanboy on Cardon Stoller.
I didn't know much about him. This is one of the best things about these interviews is I know who the players are and I watch them play, but I don't really know their personalities or that much about their history. And then it was great. It was good to talk to him. I just all the memories of that place and my man Crazy Legs Conti, shout out to Crazy Legs, who brought me to that place and a bunch of our friends like Ups and Danny Knee and Doug Salvador. We had a it was something. It was
How that
something.
place is still functioning after you, Jackalopes. where actually had responsibility at that place is beyond me. I'm picturing, so when you ever think about camps, like summer camp, I went to one or two when I was a kid, probably past like 10 or 11 years old, though I didn't go. We had a, it was called Camp Heritage, and it was at Gainesville Community College. It was a day camp. And I know there was an overnight, and there were like three age groups. And I guess the older kids were like, you know, teenage-ish. Like, I don't know if they were high school kids or not, but I just remember the overnight was, it was scandalous because there was smoking and dirty magazines and drinking and that kind of thing. But you're basically like just camped out in the woods of Catonsville Community College.
The only thing that Catonsville Community College should be used for in terms of like an overnight summer camp is the parking lot where the bus picks up kids to take them to a different summer camp.
Well, again, it was only one night was overnight. It wasn't the whole camp wasn't, it was a day camp, and then they had the one overnight. And I guess the proverbial, you know what, hit the fan with the older
Oh my
age
God,
group.
that's hilarious.
But yeah, I'm thinking that, like, when I'm thinking about you guys, I'm like meat, it's like a combination of meatballs. But then you also start thinking about like the slasher movies, like, you know, Friday the 13th and Camp Crystal Lake, you know.
Oh man,
So
so many
did any of you
memories.
dress up like in a hockey mask and scare the campers? Or,
The camps changed the whole lot, a whole lot since the years I was there. I recommend anyone go to like Camp Takahoe, just Google that and look at the website. The place looks like a country club. It's amazing. Now it did not look like that before. Anyway, let's get back to Rutgers and Michigan. Rutgers is 10-1 all time against Michigan. That was a stunning fact that I looked up, dating back to, you know, when they really started playing back in 2012. Rutgers lost in Ann Arbor in 2015 in the first ever meeting between the two teams as Big Ten foes. But they've won nine straight in the series, including 6-0 record all time at home when the games were played in New Jersey against the Wolverines. This is an intriguing matchup. It really is. I love the way Rutgers is playing right now and Michigan.
when you look back on the history of Big Ten men's lacrosse, like Michigan, the only team that they could really compete with was Rutgers back then. So I think that speaks to the evolution of both programs. Michigan has won two Big Ten tournament championships. Rutgers in 2022 made it to the national semifinals. So listen, you know, Michigan, they were outplayed in the fourth quarter last week at home against Penn State. Offensively, they use a ton of picks, but Ryan Cohen, who's the main guy, you know, needs a little bit of help. They've had some injuries on the offensive end. We'll see if guys are able to come back this week to help the cause. You know, defensively, I think Hunter Taylor's having a great season in goal, and Michigan's a very physical defense, very big and physical. You look at Rutgers, first ever win over Maryland as members of the Big Ten Men's Lacrosse Conference, and then their first win over the Terps since 1980. So it's 45 years. And I called a number of those games thinking that Rutgers was going to knock off Maryland. And it just never happened. But they did it this past weekend. And that's a huge shot in the arm for the Scarlet Knights. When you look at them offensively, they were so top heavy the last couple of years with Shane Knoblauch and Ross Scott. They now have seven guys in double-digit points, much more balanced. And then you get to the defense. You know, Rutgers has had great individual defenders over the years. You know, guys like Michael Rexrode and Kyle Pless and really good short stick defensive middies. But I think as a unit, they are as good as I've ever seen it. And when you're backstopped by a guy like Carden Stoller, who is in the conversation for first-team All-American goalie, and that's saying a lot when you consider, you know, especially in the Big Ten, some of the goalies that we have in the conference. That's pretty impressive. So this will be a great game, must-see TV. It'll be me and Jason Knapp with the call, and I'm really looking forward to it.
And you can catch that, as I said, at noon on Sunday on the Big Ten Network. All right, Dix, it's time for this week's Give and Go. Now, you know I'm not a big hockey guy, I think you're a much bigger hockey fan than I am. But I have a lot of friends who are hockey fans. A lot of our listeners are. I know that there are a lot of lacrosse people who are also like lacrosse hockey guys. I was aware that just being in a proximity to DC sports media and talk shows and everything, that Ovechkin was had a quest to surpass Gretzky, and he was close and sort of was following it from a distance. But on Friday night, went over to some neighbor's house. They invite us over, and they're huge Caps fans. Go to several games a year. Huge. They're watching the game as they invited my wife and I over. They're sitting around watching the game. Their daughter had actually gone to the game and was just getting back home, the game where he tied it, I think. And they just couldn't stop talking about it. And it really made me think, like, man, last week we spent a lot of time talking about Baltimore and our love of Baltimore. But one of the beauties of living where we live is between the two beltways of DC and Baltimore. And while we identify as being Baltimore fans, we have lots of neighbors who might identify as being like Washington, DC fans that cheer for the Commanders and the Caps and the Wizards and now the Nats. So it made me start thinking, Dix, where does Ovechkin rank in like DC sports stuff? Obviously, this accomplishment is amazing. Become the all-time leading goal scorer in the history of the NHL. So my question is two parts to you. One, how does that record passing literally a guy named the Great One to take on the mantle as the greatest goal scorer of all time in all sports, like how does that kind of, in your opinion, kind of rank an achievement like that? And then I want to talk about just DC sports in general and who are some of the other like luminaries, because I couldn't think of a whole, I had a short list real quick of maybe like the best Redskins, Commanders, a Wizard. But I don't have a big list. Like it's much easier for me to do like a Baltimore list. And I wanted to see what your how your list might compare to mine in terms of like the best professional DC athletes of all time. So let's start with Ovechkin's accomplishment and just where it sits in ranking in other sports, similar type of things.
First thing I want to address is Ovechkin and Gretzky. Gretzky in particular. How gracious and humble. He couldn't have handled it any better. I mean, just incredible grace and humility by, like you said, the great one. And in this day and age of kind of got you sports, I did see a clip on social media. Somebody was interviewing Gretzky. And they were like, yeah, your record stood for however long, but you have to admit, Ovi's probably a lot more impressive because there's better coaching, there's better goalies, there's better this, there's better that. And Gretzky was just like, yeah, you're right on all those counts, but I would have loved to have played 3-on-3 overtime. And, so he mentioned some of the things in the modern game that probably would have helped him. But I just thought it was so inappropriate for a guy to take, be like, dumping on Gretzky. Like, why can't people just appreciate what these guys accomplish in their eras? They can't help when they were born. They can't help when they played. And Gretzky was absolutely phenomenal. Ovechkin, though, is a different animal. He is gigantic, a lot bigger than Gretzky. But to kind of frame things up, to me, this is incredibly impressive when you think about the physicality of hockey, how the game has changed in terms of bigger, faster, stronger. Ovechkin's durability. I mean, the guy broke his leg and came back 4 weeks later. And I know the conversation this week a lot has been like, okay, what's more impressive, Ovechkin's all-time goal records in the NHL or LeBron's all-time scoring record in the NBA? Defense is virtually non-existent in the NBA.
Yeah.
And when you think about players in the NBA, a lot of them get to pick and choose where they play. They take games off for load management. I don't think hockey guys do that. I don't think they do that. I mean, look, I'm not going to be one of these people that is saying this record is more impressive than this sport, football, baseball, basketball, whatever. It's just pretty darn special. And
Yeah, it
I
really
did
is.
also see a stat that Austin Matthews, who's a young superstar for the Maple Leafs, game to game in their careers, like Ovechkin at, let's say it's 100 games. I know it's not 100 games, but 100 games versus Matthews at 100 games. He has like 7 or 8 more goals than Ovi did at his stage of his. So there's talk now of will Auston Matthews break Ovi's record? But I loved his celebration. He scored and then he did the slide and his entire team came to join him. Not to dump on LeBron, but when he broke Kareem's record, he runs to the other end of the court with his arms up, you know, basking in the glow, and no, none of his teammates came to him. You know, so I think that just kind of speaks also to the mentality of each sport without reading into, you know, relationships of teammates and that kind of thing. But man, to answer the first part of your question, what an incredible accomplishment by the Great Eight.
Yeah, when you think about longevity is so important to accomplish those all-time records, whether it's the most hits in baseball or strikeouts, like, you know, Nolan Ryan might have, or in football, touchdown passes, yards thrown. You have to play a long time and be excellent for a long time because it's so competitive. And there's something really to be said about that. You know, I've made fun and joked about guys who have taken advantage of like a fifth or sixth year of college basketball and are breaking, like, again, RJ Davis, first team All-American, he's a great college player, but he's been able to play in North Carolina for 5 years. And, you know, he's going to be on like the all second all-time leading scorer, and he's broken a ton of records at UNC. And it's just, I've said you should get to pick the 4 years of stats that you want in your 5 year career that you got more than anybody else. But in the pros, it's different. It's everyone wants to have a long career. So being able to do it every day, go in and out, season after season, there's so much more meaningful to that. And I don't know, like you said, I'm not exactly sure how to stack it up against accomplishments in other sports like basketball or football or baseball, but it is should be recognized. And I heard your guy Joe B talking about how he was going to call it and how he did, and you know, being able to experience that. I'm sure you'll hear about that from him the next time you talk to him.
Yeah, and it's exciting for Joe. If you go to Monumental Sports, their Twitter handle, not only do you have the call, but they also had a camera on him and Craig Lachlan in the booth for the call. It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
And
that's
I know
cool.
that was a gigantic moment for him and something that he'll remember for the rest of his life. And I'm with you. You know, I actually think more like Armando Bacot when it comes to Carolina basketball. Like, amazing career, set a lot of records, but I don't think anybody's really comparing him to, you know, Sam Perkins or James Worthy or, you know, other incredible big men that have played it in Chapel Hill. Which also brings me to this. And how are you doing after the Duke? People call it choke. I'm not willing to call it a choke. I mean, Houston just made plays and Duke struggled down the stretch, but how are you doing after the Blue Devils coughed it up this past weekend?
I'm fine. I said before the tournament started, and I recommended to everyone, I said, look, the four number one seeds are historically good. In any other year, they would win or be the favorite to easily win the championship in any other year. They all made it to the Final Four. I came in first in one bracket pool, second in another, and third in another. And my team that
Wow,
I
so you
picked
won
didn't even win
money.
it. I may have. Yeah.
You son of a
So
gun.
I knew that. And when the Final Four started, I said, look, every team is really good. I don't know what's going to happen. It was certainly disappointing that they had a lead that they could not hold. But looking back on it, Houston made every one of those plays. Every play in the last couple minutes of that game, they made the 3-pointer they had to make. They could put a 63% foul shooter on the line. He made both clutch free throws. Our guy, also not a good free throw shooter, he missed the front end of a one-on-one that could have really changed the outcome of the game. We made turnovers. They didn't. Got to hand it to him. However, Houston also blew a 12-point lead on Monday and turned the ball over, had the ball with 19.7 seconds left in the game, and didn't even get a shot off. And no one's talking about how Houston choked, which is just crazy. It's just that narrative that everybody hates Duke, and I get it, and I'm fine with it.
Well, I don't, I mean, yeah, I'm with you. And
Same situation, man, but
the
worse.
championship, Just with that long answer and how defensive you got, I know that you're not, you're lying to our audience, but that's okay. I get it.
No,
You're
there were lots of
invested.
time. My daughter probably cried herself to sleep on
Really?
Saturday night. Yeah, she
Huh.
was really
I don't
broken up
like
with
to
it.
hear
I was
that.
just like stunned. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Like I had the same look on my face that the players had after the game. Like, what just happened? Like, we're a better team. We're winning for 38 minutes.
The
But
championship game was a disappointment after such a great tournament. It was so sloppy. I don't think, and I think that's what you get. Like we talk about that in lacrosse too. You give everything you have on that Saturday, and then you come back 2 days later. Now basketball's different because they play two, three games a week during the regular season, but I'll say 2 games a week, but they're spaced out typically by what, 3, 4 days. This one was, less than 48 hours for Houston. But in any event, and I think I shared this with you and I've shared this with others, like I love hating on Duke basketball.
oh, you sure
Coach
do.
K, I think, is an amazing coach, but he is an arrogant, jerky personality. And then they've always had that villain, whether it's Laettner or Cherokee Parks or Carlos Boozer, Bobby Hurley. This team was very hard to dislike. I think Shire is a good young coach. He's not a crybaby. He doesn't seem to try to intimidate the officials. And they did it with such a young team that, I mean, they were fun to watch. Cooper Flagg and Knipple and that's a Duke team that I couldn't point to anything to say, yeah, that's why I don't like, that's why I want them to lose. That's why I don't like them.
Yeah, they were so much fun to watch all year. They played beautiful, great basketball. Their efficiency ranking on offense is the second highest all time in the history of the KenPom rankings that go back to 1997. And defensively, they were like fourth this season in defensive efficiency. They were just beautiful. They play great basketball. Sometimes the best team doesn't always win. Hats off to Houston and Florida for winning the championship. It was fun. But let's get back to my question. We'll wrap this
All
up
right,
real quick.
DC Sports Luminaries.
Yeah, so I made a list. You tell me if you agree with them. And it's one guy from each sport. And I don't really have a particular rank. I think Ovechkin is like the greatest all-time DC athlete. He's won a
I think I would agree
championship.
with you. I would
And
agree.
he's extremely
Won a
popular.
Stanley Cup, all-time NHL goal scoring leader. Yep, he's got my vote.
And without a doubt, like the face of the franchise, like when you think of the greatest Caps player of all time, it's him. And
Absolutely.
maybe there's some recency bias because he's still playing. We'll see how it is years and years later. But yeah, he's number one. Wes Unseld. In terms of like a bullet or wizard, like I can't even really think of a lot of other. I go back to like Manute Bol or like Gilbert Arena, like John Wall. There haven't been like any wizards who really jump out at me.
Elvin Hayes was a
Okay.
bullet back in the day.
But the play is enough of his career here. And I feel like Wes
That's
Unseld is a
true.
guy who not only
No,
was a
Wes
Hall of
Unseld
Famer
by far and away. Yeah.
as a player, but then he coached there and was a GM for a long time. So I put Big Wes there. And shout out to his son, Little Wes, Hopkins grad, Loyola Don too, who also coached the Wizards just a few years
Right.
ago. Baseball, Walter Johnson, the Big Train, was a senator. And I think people would say he's one of the greatest, most dominant athletes to ever represent DC. He's got to be up there. And then the other, it's a short list of other, like, because the Nats don't have a huge history. I like Steven Strasburg, Ryan Zimmerman. I mean, Max Scherzer won some Cy Youngs, but he's played for so many teams that I don't really even think of him as a national. So, and then football, Darryl Green, greatest Redskin of all time, right? Riggins, beloved, but he didn't have the career that Darryl Green did. And then Art Monk, right? Joe Theismann might be up there. Slinging Sammy Baugh. Didn't he play for the Redskins a long time ago? But really, it's like
Yeah.
Darryl Green, Walter Johnson, Wes Unseld, and Ovechkin. That's my list.
Okay. Good list. I've been a Caps fan for a really, really long time, so I could point to players like, but again, Ovi's the only one that's won the cup. They've only won one Stanley Cup in their franchise. I would put Tom Wilson up there, a current Cap. I mean, just an amazing player and enforcer, a unique blend of enforcer, but also incredible skill. But if you go back, Rod Langway, Peter Bondra, Ole the goalie, Ole Kolzig, incredible player. That's just a couple. Beyond that, and I do watch the Bullets slash Wizards. They're terrible. I mean, they are so bad.
They're so bad. I think they lost to the Sixers last night. Like that's
I
how
was
the
watching
Sixers
that
are
game.
trying to tank. They're trying to lose. I didn't even know anybody on the court.
It was bad. It was they're bad. And I don't know what it's going to take for them to figure it out. But yeah, I like your list. Trying to think of any. Bernard King played for the Bullets back in the day. Great player. He split his time though between the Knicks and the Bullets. I think Adrian Dantley may have also spent some time, but
Of
he
him
was
too,
always
the
looked at as
Nuggets.
a me first guy. You know, that's who the Pistons got rid of to build a team to win a championship that was more concerned about, you know, the result than the team result than the individual result. Maybe he didn't play for the Bullets though. I don't want to be unfair. He is from the DC area. Went to DeMatha.
But this is a perfect example. If we don't know that the guy played for the Wizards or the Bullets,
Yeah,
like he
that's
doesn't
true.
count. You're not, you
True.
don't make the pantheon of great DC athletes, right?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. When it comes to baseball, who cares about the Nats? But they did win the World Series in 2019, and Juan Soto was probably their best player.
But
But he's a
is,
vagabond. I mean,
I mean, he's only like 25 years old and he's
yeah.
played for significantly for three other teams, you know, now.
Right,
So.
right. So I don't, whoever you name for baseball, I'm fine with that. Redskins, I think he hit the nail on the head with, and I can't stand, I couldn't stand the Redskins. Just, rooted for him in the Super Bowl against the Dolphins because I dislike the Dolphins more. But then all the shenanigans that Jack Kent Cook played, barring blocking a team from Baltimore. And but I think when you look at the Redskins
That's the only
deficiency,
owner. That's the only owner of the Redskins that you didn't like.
well, I mean, Snyder, I didn't really, I mean, look, I know because I don't care about Washington football, but I know that, friends of mine who are Washington football fans despise Daniel Snyder.
Everybody
And
hates him. I mean, I
yeah,
think everybody
exactly.
hates him.
But like, how can I mean, I'm not saying I like him. I'm indifferent because they sucked while he was the. So that was kind of the best thing that came out of it was they stunk. But I think you have to look at like Doug Williams, Mark Rypien. They were quarterbacks that won Super Bowls. Dexter Manley was a terrific defensive end for them. I think they had the Hogs. That had a personality. Like they kind of made offensive linemen famous. Joe Jacoby was one of them. And,
Jacoby.
but yeah, I think that I mean, this current iteration of the, Redskins slash Commanders, I mean, Jaden Daniels looks like he's poised to have an incredible career.
He does.
Terry McLaurin.
Scary Terry.
I think also you could look at, although I think wasn't he traded to the Broncos? It was Clinton Portis. Was a
Yeah.
Redskin for a while.
Who is the safety who was killed?
Sean
Beloved
Taylor.
Sean Taylor could
Sean
have been
Taylor.
that. He could have been that
He
guy,
could have, yeah,
but
for
his life
sure.
was taken early while he was still in his prime, really.
Yeah, but I think to your point earlier, Ovechkin, head and shoulders above these guys, in terms of individual accomplishment. But I mean, listen, let's not take anything away in the pantheon of things. Unseld helped lead them to their only NBA championship. And then back when we were growing up, the Redskins year in, year out, I mean, Joe Gibbs, I know he's a coach, but Joe Gibbs has to be
Yeah,
recognized
you're right.
as
He could be in
maybe,
there.
I mean, just an incredible coach, and what
Won
he
one of those
did
Super Bowls. Yeah,
with
for
those
sure.
Redskin teams. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. All right, that seems like a good place to stop. Thanks again to our guest, Carton Stoller. Good luck to the Scarlet Knights for the rest throughout the rest of the season. A reminder that the D-Fly and Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment and business development solutions, and they seem to be just really good guys. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. If you like what you heard, like us on your favorite podcast app, subscribe to this, and tell a friend. Share the love, it's free, and it helps us out. We always love to hear from you. Feel free to email us at dflyanddixie@gmail.com. But stop with all the spam. I get a lot of spam in that account. It's crazy.
Do
Or
you?
I do. Or find us on Twitter and Instagram at dflyanddixie. Thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy the games.